This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 7:15 and you're with Sharmila and Lynn on the Evening Edition. We're now moving on to looking at the National Unity Blueprint, which is something that was launched just a couple of weeks ago by the Perikatan National Government. And there have been a fair amount of criticism, so we're going to look at the arguments for it and against it, and really what it really means, this idea of national unity.
You know, we've spent a lot of time today talking about language, and I think that that's an interesting backdrop for this conversation, because unity and national unity, the phrase is used so often that it's almost, I'm not sure that we are even united in an understanding of what that actually means. And just for context, this plan was launched in February, so just last month, and the goals are quite lofty. They are to build a patriotic and democratic society, to develop a national identity, and strengthen what the plan itself is calling the unity ecosystem, which I think is an interesting phrase. And it outlines 12 strategies in it, along with actions. We have some examples here.
So they talk about, among other things, greater emphasis on the Rukun Negara in terms of for education, for organizing of more programs to strengthen patriotism, increasing the use of Bahasa Melayu as the national language, encouraging the learning of other languages, including an emphasis on basic Chinese and Tamil lessons at all education levels. They also mention addressing racial and religious issues on social media, including monitoring, enforcing and educating the public on the ethics and laws of using social media.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, when you look at something like that, and again, tying it back to this very vague sense of national unity, I hate to be that person, but what is the KPI here? How are we measuring this? Are we measuring this by feel? You know, by how we all feel? Do we feel more united? Do we feel more like Malaysians? Are we measuring it by any other form of output? I think that's my question, because when you have these sorts of things, I think the aim is good. I'm definitely not at all dinging the idea of us being more united, but I think measuring that can be very, very difficult, and made worse when you look at the kind of public discourse that we see from politicians, among others, from public figures in general, and the fact that in some cases, the news media also ends up giving those kinds of opinions attention. And that just feels very far away from what the plan is intending to do.
And that's exactly what some of the criticism is, right? Some say that it will have no impact. And that's mainly because there seems to be a disconnect between what the government ministers and politicians are doing versus what the document seems to be talking about. So that's what we want to get to the heart of, what exactly this idea of national unity is referring to. But let us know what you think. What do you think of the National Unity Blueprint? What are some of the things that do need to be looked at in terms for this idea of national unity to actually become a reality? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 0187898899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We do now have on the line Badrul Hisham Ismail, who is the Director of Programs at Aiman Research. Thank you for joining us, Badrul.
Hi, thank you.
Let's start with the purpose of this blueprint. Yeah, what is it intended to do? Is it something that we need right now?
Well, I guess in a sense, we do need national unity. But whether we need a blueprint or not, that's a whole different matter, of course. In a sense that, of course, as a group of people living on the same land, having different identities and different background and all that, we do need some sort of a social cohesion for us to coexist together. But the thing about social cohesion is that it's not something that you can easily create or dictate. It's something that needs to be built bottom up rather than top down. So this is sort of put any government, regardless of current one or any or previous or future ones, in sort of a tricky position, because we want them to do something, but having a too heavy-handed approach, almost like a authoritative approach, often lead to backlash or often lead to unsuccessful endeavors.
Yeah, so that's the thing, right? With something like a blueprint, mm-hmm. how would this end up trickling down to the man on the street, so to speak, and in theory?
Yeah, again, that's the tricky part. It's not something that can easily trickle down. Like I said, it needs to be built up rather than going to, from the top, which if we look at the current document that we have, I would say half of it sounds more like a propaganda rather than anything that is useful, that people can actually sort of easily practice and easily sort of accumulate, easily practice on the ground, I would say.
So are there plus points to this document? What are some of the positives that you might see?
Well, I think there are a couple of things that at least they're going to the right direction. One of it is sort of creating community mediator for conflict resolution. I think that's a really interesting aspect that sort of allow local community to deal with problems themselves rather than having very strong authority to deal with any kind of conflict that the given community is dealing with. So having that, and if they are really doing it and having it in each community, that would sort of, you know, create that bottom-up approach that I was talking about rather than a heavy-handed state approach. So that's one thing that is good, I think. Another thing that was kind of interesting is creating safe spaces, safe social spaces. Or, I mean, the examples that they give are so unimaginative in terms of the spaces that they can create, like, you know, Dewan Serbaguna or community spaces and all that kind of stuff. But in a sense, those spaces do play a role. And what I would say is create more public spaces that is outside of any anyone's control, that the public have to sort of learn how to coexist and negotiate with among each other and sort of nurture that idea of cohesion and coexistence among different groups. So I think those couple two things that I think is a good direction at least.
And maybe if you want to build on that, what are some of the gaps then that you see within the document?
Well, the gaps, in my opinion, personally, are quite too many. One thing that I said, like I mentioned earlier, the first half of the document sounds more like propaganda than anything that you can easily practice on the ground. And a lot of them doesn't really also tackle the root issue. For example, the emphasizing of the education of Rukun Negara. Although the Rukun Negara is an important document that everybody should sort of at least understand or try to learn from, our education structure itself is already problematic. I mean, imagine if we continue with the current education system, which is an exam-based and people just memorizing things, and adding Rukun Negara into it is definitely not going to help anything. It's just going to add more into things that people would have to be tested. It's just going to add more to things that people have to memorize rather than a more holistic education system. And in fact, a holistic education would be suffice in sort of creating a sense of social cohesion that we need, that includes understanding of other people, interacting with people outside of your own community and all that. And that can be introduced in a holistic education system rather than introducing new subjects in the current education system that we have. So that's just among some of the things that I see are not actually tackling the root issue, but rather than just giving more activities or more, instructions on going through with the current ones.
So, Badrul, what's interesting about this National Unity Blueprint is that it actually takes as its starting point the 13th May 1969 racial riots. Now, mm-hmm. is this the right place to start this sort of a conversation?
I would say no. I mean, I understand why they use that, because it's a national event that is in a lot of people's memories, although not many people are alive to that live through it, but it's something that has been, you know, talked about for over the years. But so I understand why they're using it, I guess. And it was the event that led to the NEP, that led to the Kongres Kebudayaan Kebangsaan or Dasar Kebudayaan Kebangsaan and all that. But it sort of, in a way, excludes the history of this place before that. And even the history of this before Malaysia was, you know, created. And we still have generations of people who live, who is older than the country. So we can't, if you want to look into history, then we have to go as far as we can, in a sense that giving a holistic understanding of what this place is, its rich history, its rich diversity, its rich stories and narratives, that, you know, instead of excluding you know, some period and only highlighting certain periods.
Now, we have seen over the years, and in fact recently, an increase of sorts in race-based parties. Of course, there's Berjuang, there's Bersatu, there's also P. Wedamurthy's Malaysian Advancement Party, meant to protect the interests of the Indian community. How does this affect the conversation around national unity?
Well, the problem with that is that if race-based parties are built in to protect vulnerable communities, then it makes sense. For example, if we have an Orang Asal based party to sort of protect the community of Orang Asal community and even the Indian community, because we know that minority groups are discriminated, so they need to have a stronger voice either in parliament or in the political sphere. But having a majority ethnic group sort of promoting that, it's sort of signaling a different message, because then it becomes domination, then it becomes supremacy rather than protecting the vulnerable. So I'm, in a way, I wouldn't say no entirely to any identity-based party, although we have to be careful with it. And the idea is identity-based party should be to protect an already vulnerable community rather than to dominate other different communities. And unfortunately, with the idea of Pejuang and Bersatu, you know, that it seems more a domination of a specific group rather than protecting vulnerable groups.
Badrul, any final thoughts on this question of national unity?
Well, it's bizarre to hear it coming out this time of the year within this you know, administration. But it's something that I think Malaysians should think about as citizens, rather than waiting for the government or the you know, the authority to think about it for us. I don't think we need a blueprint, but we do need certain practices and certain spaces to sort of nurture and cultivate this kind of cohesion that we need.
Badrul, thanks again for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.
That was Badrul Hisham Ismail, Director of Programs at Iman Research. Do share your thoughts with us. What's your opinion on the National Unity Blueprint? What work do you think needs to be done to establish this idea of national unity in the first place? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.